This is Heather Johnson, and you're listening to the Ayurveda Life School Podcast, episode number 150, Supporting Healthy Pregnancy with Ayurveda. This podcast is for people who want to take their health physically, emotionally, and spiritually to a whole new level using Ayurvedic medicine, the ancient healing tradition from India. This is the Ayurveda Life School Podcast, and I'm your host, Heather Johnson. Hello, my friends. Welcome to the podcast today. I am excited to be here with you again, taking part two of our women's health series, specifically focusing on the fertile years of life when we are wanting to expect a baby, when we're expecting a baby, and then how to take care of our bodies afterwards. So this is part two. We're going to talk today about pregnancy itself, what practices, what herbs, what is recommended in ancient Ayurvedic text, and how we can apply some of that today to help us to have a healthy pregnancy and a healthy baby. I've had four children, and I can tell you that each pregnancy was very different depending on the life situation that we were in, the age that I was, and I think the gender has something to do with it as well. So I've got three girls and one boy, and the pregnancies, I felt like I could kind of tell there was something different with my son. Now, I loved being pregnant, which I know sounds weird, and I enjoyed it the most with my first baby. And then by that last one, I did start getting some of those issues that women get when they're pregnant, like morning sickness and such. But I felt like it was a time that I really could slow down and honor my own work that my body was up to. I used to always tease my husband and say, I am really busy right here. I am making a human. And you really are a busy body when you're in the process of making another human being. But there's things that we can look at as far as Ayurvedically to make sure that we're creating the right conditions for this baby to be as healthy as possible. And so as we look at these, we want to first focus on Kapha dosha. Kapha dosha is all about building and strength and stability. And the more that we can increase Kapha dosha, we're more likely to improve the ability for our body to sustain a pregnancy, particularly if you have a dosha that's really high in vata, simply because we need that balance, right? That groundingness. Because if you think about what your body's trying to do, it's actually forming another human being. So we need that kapha energy to be able to help with that. And so a woman of a kapha nature is also likely to have the healthiest pregnancies. So I think if you were to look at the people around you and kind of evaluate what their doshas are or yourself, and look at how your pregnancies have evolved, you could see that to be true, right? Kapha dosha is very helpful when we're dealing with having a baby. The ideal lifestyle that you'd be living, in addition to be kapha increasing, would be described as being relaxed, spiritually minded, more positive, more loving. So we need a kind of relaxed environment in order for a baby to thrive. If we're having a lot of conflicts, a lot of strong emotions, if we're having to do a lot of strong physical labor, that should be avoided. Now, we've all heard about the woman or people in our lives who, you know, I exercised up until the moment I had that baby, or they're running marathons at 8 months pregnant, and their babies were fine when they were born. They were healthy and delivered well. What we want to understand is that there's an energetic that is created in the mom when she is expecting, and what she does influences how that baby is going to respond to stresses in life. So it is important, even if we are physically active, and I was with all my babies, I was exercising and being active all the way up until I had the babies, but I also tried to temper the intensity. So I think that's what we can look at too, is that intensity, because mild exercise is important, right? It keeps our prana moving, it keeps our energy up, but if we do too much, we end up fatigued and depleted. So traditionally, in ancient Ayurveda, the women were also adorned in auspicious garments and jewelry. So they were actually looked at as being most beautiful at the time that they were pregnant. And I think that that's beautiful because we want to be cared for and we want to be looked upon lovingly when we're expecting, especially at the times when we don't feel like it. I think as a past mama, I know that there are times where you just don't feel very lovely when you are pregnant and you're not feeling your best and you may feel swollen and cumbersome and you can't move like you used to. So it's important that those around you are demonstrating some of that love to you. So in Ayurveda, what's great is we actually have a 9-month protocol that we recommend for moms when they are pregnant throughout all of the trimesters of the pregnancy in order to stay the most healthy. Now, we know that there's a lot of different ancient texts, the Sushruta, the Vagbata, the Karaka Samhita, and every single text is going to have a little bit of variations on this. So what I'm going to share with you is kind of a compilation of these three ancient texts and what they say about pregnancy and this sacred time of creating life. So when we're in the first month of pregnancy, We're focusing on room temperature, raw organic milk. So we want to boil this and then cool it to room temperature. And then we want to eat wholesome, agreeable, nourishing food. So that's the actual definition in there. So these are foods that are going to increase kapha dosha. So you want your food to be as pure as possible. When they say agreeable, they mean agreeable to you constitutionally. And wholesome, they're not processed, they're natural foods, organic if possible, and eating a good amount of them so they nourish you. So you don't want this to be a time where you're trying to lose weight. Now, many women don't know they're pregnant that first month. So if you are intending to become pregnant, you want to be paying particular attention to your diet, making sure that you're eating very wholesome, nutritious foods. And when we're preparing them, we are keeping your constitution in mind, right? If somebody is more vata-based, we don't want to do things that are going to increase and provoke vata. And if you're more pitta, we don't want to eat a lot of hot, spicy foods that are going to increase pitta. And if you already have a lot of kapha dosha, you don't need to eat a lot of heavy foods or you're going to find that you start gaining weight too early in your pregnancy. But we do want to keep in mind the quality of those foods. When we move into month two, we really recommend that milk be taken warm and that we cook it with sweet, nourishing herbs. One of the herbs that is great to add into your diet at this point is shatavari. And shatavari is a rejuvenative to the reproductive system, especially for females. And so it's something that you can take as a tablet or a capsule. It's also something you can add into teas. So one that we really highly recommend that you have on hand for that. Now, when we move into the third month, we're getting here into the end of that first trimester, you might be feeling more nausea, which is no fun, right? And I've been through that. I'm sure many of us have been through that. But when you're feeling a lot of nausea, we want to focus on staying hydrated. Because especially if you are vomiting, you're going to be losing hydration, which is going to affect the rasa dhatu. So we want to stay as hydrated as possible and add in rasayanas, things that are going to be rejuvenative to your body. So in month three, we're adding a little bit of honey and some ghee to that milk. If we're mixing in honey and ghee, we don't want to give them in equal amounts because in Ayurveda, we actually believe that to be toxic. So you want to have more ghee than honey. So just a small amount of honey in there with your milk. And this could be like a golden milk. Okay, so if your traditional golden milk is something that you're drinking, this is what we're talking about here. Now, when we get into month four, then we're looking at milk with butter in it. So normally we go with ghee, but in this month, we actually are using good organic butter. And we're taking about 12 grams of butter melted into your milk. And this is on a regular basis. So you wouldn't have to do this daily, but this is something you'd be having a couple times a week. You're noticing that milk is common. So what if you're vegan? What do you do when you're vegan? So if you're vegan, you were going to focus on the same principles, but we would use an alternative milk, understanding that it's not going to respond to our body in exactly the same way, but it can still be very nourishing at a deeper level. So when we move into month four here, we're also going to add in bone broth. So I mentioned that a moment ago. So you can make a bone broth like on your own, or you could just purchase a nice, good organic bone broth. And you can add to this shatavari and ashwagandha. Both of them are reproductive tonics. That means they're going to strengthen the reproductive organs of the body. If you're ever wondering on quantities and how much you should be adding in, always start very small. This is a good opportunity to meet with a practitioner because you would definitely want to get some recommendations on how much to add in there. But shatavari and ashwagandha, very good things to add into your bone broth. Okay, so that's here month four. And then as we move into month five, we're now getting into the middle of that second trimester, continuing to eat these nourishing, sweet-tasting foods that are going to help develop kapha, and we're going to specifically add in ghee. So we want to have 1 to 2 teaspoons of ghee every single day. This can be taken plain. It can also be added into foods, but we want to make sure that we're getting a lot of that dosage into the body because it's very good to help our body to stay nourished and hydrated as well as oileated. So 1 to 2 teaspoons, you don't need more than that. That's adequate for that. As we move into month 6 and 7, we want to add in some sweet herbal ghee. These are also called medicated ghees, and they're a little bit more difficult to make on your own. So this is something you would probably want to reach out to a practitioner to have them make for you. But a sweet herbal ghee would be adding in things like guduchi, wild yam, and vidari khand. And these are herbs that are very good rasayanas. They're going to help restore and rejuvenate the body. So great to add those in during that time period. We also want to reduce oils a little bit and also salt. That's kind of based on case by case. If you're starting to have edema or swelling, we want that salt to be just a little bit less. And if you're eating too much oily foods, we also want that to be just a little bit less, partly because you can end up with a little bit of heartburn if the oil levels are too high. And if you're having swelling or water retention, we want to decrease the salt for that. Okay. The next thing we would look at is you're starting to grow at this point, right? You're starting to see a little more tightness in the skin. You're starting to see a little bit more tightness throughout the breast area as they're starting to grow. So there's some specific herbs that we can make a little paste for those. And this is actually a fantastic little paste. So we would use sandalwood. So we get sandalwood dried herb, mix it with water or aloe juice, and then apply it to the skin. And this is going to really help to decrease extra heat that is caused by pregnancy. If your skin's really itchy because of stretching, that will help. And if you're getting stretch marks, that will help to prevent them. So you can place that across the belly, across the back area, across the breast. So anywhere that you're feeling that skin irritation, really, really helpful. Now, as we move into month 8, we want to be taking in foods that are a little bit more simple to digest. So that would be something like a thin porridge soup that's made with rice, milk, and ghee, just to keep it simple. And you could have this, you know, just a few times during that week. It's a useful time to also do a cleansing enema. So if you're not used to doing an enema, this is a little bit different, but we would doing a cleansing enema, put a little bit of oil, probably sesame oil, into the decoction, and you could do this 1 to 2 times per week. We call these a Naruha Basti. And you can add in a little bit of triphala, a little bit of water, and an oil. So it's mostly a water-based enema with just a little bit of oil added into it. The triphala helps to be a little bit more cleansing. And then you would follow this up with a anuvasana, or a tonifying basti or enema. And this would have in it sesame oil as the base. We'd add in a little ashwagandha, some guduchi. And we always want to tonify after we have purified, because we don't want to leave the body stripped of its nutrients. So if we were going to do a basti at this point that's going to purify, we would follow it with one that was going to tonify. Now, enemas are really amazing because they help to normalize that downward flow of energy, the apana vayu. So we need apana vayu in order to assist in delivery. This is the energy of vata that helps to move things down and out. So it helps with bowel elimination, helps with labor and delivery, it helps with menstruation, so anything that needs to come down and out. That is why enemas are really useful during this last bit of your pregnancy, because you're helping to kind of clear the path and clear the energy to keep things moving down and out. If you are pregnant right now and you're needing some formulations for those, go ahead and reach out and we can help share those with you as far as actual quantities, ratios, that kind of thing. Now, when we get to month 9, baby is almost ready to come. We're so excited, right? You're kind of done being pregnant at this point. You're probably wanting to be finished with this and deliver this baby, but we want to still be focusing on rejuvenation. So we can do a sweet herbal anuvasana basti, right? This is the one we talked about that has the sesame oil, ashwagandha, guduchi, once or twice a week. So really these bastis or enemas start month 8, and we continue once or twice a week until we get all the way through pregnancy, remembering that if you're going to do a cleansing one first, you need to do a tonifying one afterwards. The cleansing ones have mostly water with just a little oil. The tonifying ones are a sesame oil base, okay? Something else you can do that we don't talk about a lot is called an Uttara Basti. An Uttara Basti is a vaginal basti. So I know that might sound very interesting, probably never heard of that before. But we do them oil-based. We add ricinus to them, nutritive tonics, demulcents, things that are going to help the body to actually get prepared and the tissue get prepared for delivery. And for these, we just look at using a cotton swab soaked in those oils, and we can place that inside the vagina. You can just leave that in there overnight, take it out in the morning, allow your body to have time to really absorb the nutrients from that oil. You can use the same oil for these Uttara Bastis that you would be using for your Anuvasana Basti. So your tonifying basti that we made with the sesame oil, ashwagandha, and guduchi, we can use that same oil for the Uttara vaginal bastis. So all of that is just helping prepare that area, right? It's not much different than if you were working with a holistic doctor when you're getting ready to deliver, and they will do massage of the perineum and get that area ready so it can stretch nicely. So that's really what we're doing, is getting that area prepared. So That is your step-by-step months 1 through 9 of how you would really focus on getting ready to deliver a nice, healthy baby. Now, just some overall concepts and ideas to understand. We want to really stick with sweet tonic herbs during pregnancy, right? These are things that are going to be building. They're going to build up the body and the strength. Staying away more from bitter and pungent herbs. We don't want to have a lot of those. Avoid laxatives and purgatives because obviously we don't want the energy going down and out when we're trying to stay pregnant. And if you're going to use harataki, use it in small doses just as a tonic because it can have more of a laxative effect. Harataki is one of the herbs that is found in triphala. And so that's what helps to have that laxative effect there. And if a client is more delicate, so if you have a more delicate constitution, then during that first trimester, you want to be really careful about what herbs you're taking. We just want to protect that pregnancy until it becomes stronger in that second trimester. So work on staying in alignment with what your body is needing, building kapha, avoid over purifying, and avoid stimulating apanavayu or that downward movement of energy. When people ask often about supplements, like should they take prenatals or not take prenatals, we think of supplements, they're like insurance against a nutritional deficiency. If you have a very good diet, you're eating lots of whole foods, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, milks, oils, you're probably not going to need a lot of supplementation. But the one most important thing that people are concerned with in supplementing is typically calcium and folic acid. So we want to make sure we're getting plenty of those things in the diet. If taking a supplement, a prenatal or something, ensures that you're getting that in, then by all means, go ahead and take that. But we also want to look at the fact that the reason we need that is really because our soil is not very good. We don't have a lot of those nutrients that are getting absorbed from the soil into our food, so we're just deficient in them all the way around. As you get ready to be pregnant and then you are expecting a baby, those are just the most precious 9 months ever. I remember when I had my fourth baby and just feeling kind of sad that it was done, right? We knew that that was going to be our last baby. We weren't going to have any more after that. And it's such a beautiful, sacred time where you are solely responsible for the care of your child and everything that your baby is and the creation of the baby's body and their mind and their energy. It's all coming from your body and how you treat your body and your emotions and your energy. So taking care of yourself is a really important thing during pregnancy. And treating that as sacred time. It's just a short time in your life. I know sometimes when you're pregnant, it feels like forever. And people see you and say, oh my goodness, you haven't had that baby yet. And you just kind of want to smack them. But the more that we can see it as a sacred opportunity to be more connected to our bodies, to our babies, and even to our spouse or partner, because they are part of this experience, even if they aren't the one carrying the baby. So it's really important that we kind of stick with that. Now, there are a few aspects of pregnancy that I just wanted to touch on before we finished. One is cravings. If you've ever had an unusual craving during your pregnancy, there's not really a medical reason for that, but pregnancy cravings have been observed for millennia, right? The ancient Vaidyas wrote extensively about them. Typically, the Ayurvedic explanation for cravings is that the mother and the baby have a special connection known as the bicardiac state. So they share circulation through their hearts. And the heart is the seat of consciousness. Within the child's consciousness lie the desires of the child's past life. So a pregnant mother and the child share dual consciousness. So the feelings of the baby as they grow influences the feelings, the thoughts, and the actions of the mother. Isn't that an interesting thought? So this becomes really strong by the third month of pregnancy. And that's when all the sense organs, the eyes, the mouth, the nose, the ears, all of those are developing and become active. And so this stimulates the mind of the baby, right? Because now they're actually taking in sensations from around them. And so the baby can start expressing desires. And in Ayurveda, they believe that the desires are past life experiences. That's where the origin of those desires come from. Super interesting. So the belief is that the mother should not ignore the desires of the fetus, but you also shouldn't give in to every single desire. And so you decide whether to follow the desire or not based upon whether it's healthy or unhealthy. Much the way that we follow cravings now. If it's a healthy craving, we go for it. If it's not healthy, we avoid it. So if you're desiring a new food, that's usually good. But we would really want to avoid taking anything harmful, like alcohol or drugs, of course. And those substances can really affect the health of the baby. When these cravings that we're having when we're expecting are not met, there is a risk of creating a vata imbalance in the child. Isn't that interesting? So it leaves this emptiness, this space and openness. So if you have a craving, it's for something healthy that's going to be beneficial for you or for the baby, then you should go ahead and follow that craving. Otherwise, we want to kind of avoid those. Now, there's also a lot in the classical text about practices that a pregnant woman should avoid when they're expecting. Some of them are kind of funny, I'll be honest, but some of them make sense if you kind of look at them from a bigger picture. So I just thought I would share a few of those. So first off, it's recommended that uncomfortable seats be avoided. Well, and that's obvious, right? You don't want to sit somewhere that's uncomfortable. Natural urges should not be suppressed. Overly aggressive exercise should be avoided just to help the baby be safer and more protected. In the Ashtanga Samgraha, it says, the pregnant woman should be protected just like a vessel filled with oil to its brim is protected without any shaking. So no shaking when you're pregnant, apparently. There's one funny one that says it's interesting to note that looking into wells or down into large canyons is to be avoided because it increases apana vayu, that downward energy of motion. You don't want to take in disturbing images through your senses. And it says you should not wear the color red because this attracts demons. So that's one I don't think we need to follow really, but maybe that applies to you. A woman should sleep well, but sleeping on her back is not recommended. Sleeping in open night air is to be avoided because the environment allows evil spirits to enter the womb. And so the child will have psychiatric problems. That could explain some things because I do enjoy camping. So perhaps some of my kids' crazy business is because of sleeping outdoors. It says women should also not sleep too much because this will create a dull and lethargic child that's increasing kapha too much in the child. A woman should be in a supportive environment and avoid contact with abusive people. A woman should also monitor her own actions, thoughts, and feelings. So if you're in high levels of grief, it can produce a fearful child. If you are someone who is stealing things or you're grasping onto things, you may produce a child who is lazy. These are all classical Ayurvedic definitions, okay? So you can kind of take and leave what works for you. It says an angry woman produces fierce offspring, and a mother who thinks ill of others produces antisocial children. So some of these may or may not actually apply as you look at your own life and your own children, but they're just kind of interesting to know. They do not recommend sexual intercourse during pregnancy, according to ancient Ayurvedic text. And it's also noted that men may share the bed of a pregnant woman just once per month in some of the other texts. So there's not always agreement even between those. Whereas in Western thought, sexual intercourse is only restricted if you're in a high-risk pregnancy. So you can kind of take that for what that's worth. It is recommended to watch your diet closely. Refrain from eating pork. And in most cases, they do ask that you avoid all meat. Now, unless you're vegan now, you're probably fine to intake meat, but that is something ancient Ayurveda definitely recommended. They say just to avoid hot, sharp foods because they are reducing and we want to build. Avoid alcohol. Avoid anything that causes an addiction. And too much sweet taste can cause diabetes, which we do know gestational diabetes can be a problem. So avoiding too much of the sweet taste is good. Avoid too much sour taste. It can increase bleeding. And avoid the pungent taste because it weakens the semen of the male offspring. Interesting. Too much bitter taste can cause emaciation of the mother and the baby. And too much salty causes graying of the hair. Too much astringent causes constipation. So moderation in all things, my friends. Make sure we're getting all the tastes in, but don't go overboard with any of them. And finally, this is probably the neatest thing, actually. It says women are recommended to seek the counsel of other women who have been pregnant and given birth and to follow the recommendations of these experienced women. So we need a community of women who come together to support one another as we are getting ready to deliver these beautiful babies into the world. So I think that's probably our takeaway right there. I love that. So hopefully this was helpful information for you. So much to know about pregnancy, about women, about our health, and how to take care of our bodies so that we can produce that next generation of babies, have these amazing humans that are healthy and balanced when they come into the earth. If you are expecting or planning to try to conceive soon, it would be really helpful to have a private consultation just so you can get everything customized to your individual circumstances. So you can go ahead and reach out if that's something you're interested in. If you have not taken part in the 28-day Ayurveda immersion, I highly recommend it. Fantastic way to start your Ayurvedic journey. And if there's anything else that I can do to support you as you are learning and growing within Ayurveda, don't hesitate to reach out. Have a beautiful week. We'll talk to you soon. Namaste. Before you go, was this episode helpful for you? Well, the most helpful thing you can do in return is to leave a review in iTunes. The reviews are what keep the podcast going. And be sure to subscribe and share this episode if you loved it. You can connect with me online at AyurvedaLifeSchool.com, on Instagram, and on Facebook at Ayurveda Life School. Have a beautiful day. Namaste.